Did you know that we can unknowingly gaslight ourselves? Why do we do that? And how might that show up in our lives? In today's episode, my guest and I will deconstruct one of the ways people gaslight themselves as we talk about an example from her life. I'm Sarah Morales, the host of this podcast. And if you're learning from the things I'm doing in this podcast, I'd love to invite you to attend my free workshop. Find out more details, like when the next workshop will be, on my website. And the link will be in the show notes. My guest today is the amazing MJ Dennis. Now, some of you will already recognize that name, but for those of you who don't know that name, I'd love to introduce her to you today. MJ and I met at our APSATS training many years ago. I couldn't even remember how many. It's like seven or something like that. We were in Florida at the time, and I remember seeing another person from Austin, Texas on the sign-in, and so I sought her out. That was one of the best decisions of my life, as that started both an absolutely incredible partnering and working with helping people, and gave me the gift of a wonderful friend. So early on in our collaborating, we both really geeked out about the gaslighting, and she is a big reason that I continue to relentlessly pursue understanding gaslighting. And so, you know, all that this woman brings to the podcast today, I wanted to brag about her for a minute because she won't do it herself. So MJ is a licensed professional counselor, a licensed marriage and family therapist, an APSATS certified partner trauma therapist, and an ASECT certified sex therapist. That is just an absolutely wonderfully powerful, unique combination. Her path led her to specialize in areas involving unhealthy boundaries, domestic violence, sexual abuse, sexual dysfunction, and infidelity. She practices currently at Crossroads Counseling Associates in Austin, Texas. Through her work at Crossroads, she has encountered many clients reeling from the trauma of being in a relationship with someone with problematic sexual behavior. Because of this, she has chosen to become a specialist who works with partners of sex addicts as she realizes that betrayal affects their self-esteem, security, and sexuality, which is one of her passions. Her passion is to help those struggling with issues related to pelvic floor dysfunction, sexual intimacy, trauma, shame, anxiety, and depression. So she has helped so many people with so many of these things. Now, the last thing I want to brag about her, because I'm always talking about this and referring people to this specific modality, I want to read this little bit that I wrote about her earlier this morning. Being the passionate and gifted therapist that she is, she relentlessly pursues the best therapeutic treatments she can give to her clients. And what this did is this led her to first EMDR and ultimately what we call emotional transformation therapy, or ETT. I'm gonna read the technical kind of definition, which is an attachment-based form of interpersonal therapy whose outcomes are substantially amplified by precise visual brain stimulation. Now, a lot of us won't know what that means, and it's fair. Basically, y'all, it's Harry Potter therapy, meaning, honestly, it's almost magical. I've done it a few times. It's almost magical how quickly it works to help resolve trauma. And she has seen so much transformational healing with ETT that she pretty much almost immediately turned around and went on a path to where she is now an ETT trainer, right? So she's not just doing it with her clients. She is actively training other therapists out there so that more therapists can use this modality with their clients. MJ, I am so glad to have you on here. You are basically the definition of badass. Thank you for being here today.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
Yay! Yes. Y'all are in for a treat. She's absolutely incredible. All right. So the word of the day is catastrophize. And this word is actually given to me by MJ. And kind of before we unpack it a little bit, I just wanted to read the definition that it actually comes from the APS Dictionary of Psychology. And that is, to catastrophize is to exaggerate the negative consequences of events or decisions. People are said to be catastrophizing when they think that the worst possible outcome will occur from a particular action or in a particular situation when they feel as if they are in the midst of a catastrophe in situations that may be serious and upsetting, but are not necessarily disastrous. And I think that this, it's a big word, MJ, right? But I think it happens a lot more than we actually know or see that it's happening.
Sometimes people catastrophize and because they don't know this word, they mm-hmm. might not catch it.
Yep.
Or know that they are doing this almost, it's oftentimes a forward fear. Mm. Where we're afraid something catastrophic might happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can get worked up being afraid of what might happen in the future and create a catastrophe that probably won't happen.
Yeah. And I think there are normal, natural reasons why people do this. And again, one of my passions with this podcast is increasing awareness, not so that we shame ourselves or walk around living in fear or second guessing ourselves. When we raise awareness, we're more empowered. Right,
yes.
We can actually use the appropriate tools for the appropriate situations if we are connected with the reality of what is happening in and around us. So this, to me, I thought was a brilliant topic to bring to my listeners so that we can get curious with ourselves and see, is this something that I do with myself? Because I don't want to live in a place of hypervigilance or fear, and I definitely don't want to abandon myself. Right, which I think we'll get this when we get to the deconstruction zone. I'll unpack what that looks like a little bit more. But I think that that's one of the side effects of catastrophizing when we do that with ourselves.
And as you're saying that, Sarah, I'm thinking, right, knowledge is power. Mm. Education empowers us. We humans do better, so to speak, if we can put a framework around something and understand it and have words for it.
Yep.
Right. That knowing anxiety is a human condition. All humans have anxiety, and catastrophizing is actually a flavor of anxiety. It's one of the ways that we humans can express our anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that you said normal, natural.
Yep.
This is something humans do. We're not here to shame anybody.
Nope.
Instead, we want to talk about this human behavior so that people can reflect, do I do this? And if I do, how do I manage it?
Yep. And even I think so that we can have self-compassion, understanding why.
Heck yes.
Right. It's so much easier to have compassion for ourselves. We're like, oh, well, no wonder, right? Like a phrase that I love to use with my clients, I think I started introducing it to my clients about a year ago, was of course. Of course I'm having this response. Of course I'm catastrophizing, right? Like, and it doesn't actually serve me. Of course I'm doing it. And yet what is the best thing, the most loving thing, the most self-compassionate thing, the most empowering thing, the thing that is most in alignment with my truth and who I want to be, and right? Like all of those questions, right? Like, of course, and it's always the both and, right?
Yes.
Like, and so I love that. So let's actually get into the story time segment so that my listeners can kind of understand, well, okay, you're talking all about catastrophizing, but what does it sound like? How can I identify it? Like, help me understand, right? So MJ, you came to me with a few really good examples of what catastrophizing may sound like. Will you share those with my listeners?
Yes. So I started thinking about kids and I was trying to remember some catastrophizing I did when I was a child.
Mm.
And I thought of an example. I remember saying when I did something that I felt was inappropriate behavior, or if I thought I did something wrong, I would say, "My parents are going to kill me."
Right.
Oh no.
Yeah.
My mom's going to kill me. Mm-hmm. My dad's going to kill me. Well, as you can tell, I'm still here.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
The catastrophe was really, I anticipated getting in trouble or getting some kind of consequence for my behavior. But my brain took that, it snowballed, it got bigger.
Exactly.
And I'd say, my parents are going to kill me. Mm-hmm. So it registered to my brain as a matter of life and death.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep.
And that, telling our brain that we're going to die, mm-hmm. speaking that, mm-hmm. parents are going to kill me, that would up my anxiety.
Yep.
It wasn't an anxiety management tool. Instead, if my mm-hmm. brain thought, parents are going to kill me, I got even more upset.
Yep. Yep. It's a great example.
Think of this, Sarah, as a type of gaslighting, because as you've said before, gaslighting is a type of reality distortion. Mm-hmm. So if I told myself as a kid, my parents are going to kill me, mm-hmm. and some part of me, my amygdala, responded to that danger, mm-hmm. and I found myself in distress, mm-hmm. anxiety went through the roof, it wasn't accurate. It wasn't true.
Yeah.
I was distorting my own reality.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, again, what I think is so super important and why this isn't a shaming thing, right? Again, people who know me know this is one of my favorite quotes. It's the Maya Angelou quote of do the best you can until you know better. Then when you know better, do better, right? So of course, you know, again, that phrase, of course we do this until we know better, until we know that that's actually self-gaslighting and it's harmful to me to, maybe exaggerate, you know, the potential harm. And why, I love how you said it. I actually have it in my notes for the deconstruction zone, right? Like there are all kinds of physical, you know, manifestations that this can have in our body when we're not intentional with how we talk about things. Right? It's not about us being too much. It's just about us naming exactly what it is for us. Right.
Yes.
Right. So mm-hmm. when we say like, I feel like I'm going to die, like I know that feeling, like I feel like I'm in so much pain right now. My heart literally aches because it feels broken. Right. We have to like raise our intentionality around the words that we choose because our words have power because the way that our brain and our body is connected.
I feel like I'm going to die is much different than mm-hmm. I'm going to die.
Exactly. This is going to kill me. Right. But I think even there's like levels, right? Like the most self-gaslighty is I'm going to die or this is going to kill me. I think a little less is I feel like I'm going to die because I do think that's still a slight exaggeration, right? I think a step down is in this moment, this feels unbearable.
Yes.
Right? Like stepping down, right? Because even in that, I'm putting boundaries around my subconscious, right? By saying, this is only going to last for so long. I'm reassuring myself in that moment. This is only going to last for so long. And it's not going to, it feels unbearable. It's so big. It feels unbearable right now.
And even that, Sarah, it feels unbearable, but it is bearable.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Watch me move through this really hard thing.
Yep. You know, I said it in one of my podcasts the other day where to me, the difference between unhealthy people and healthy people is that healthy people know how to use their tools. That's it. To me, I mean, if you're going to reduce it back to its most simple thing, right? So in this moment, using our tools is not catastrophizing, right? Like naming thing. I love it. I love it so much. Okay. We could geek out about every little thing. So let's go on to the next example. Cause you had a couple of different examples. I think that
I
were really good.
Kids, mm-hmm. Two for kids and two for adults. Mm-hmm. So with kids, again, going back to that example of doing something and, you know, a behavior that I anticipated would get me in trouble. My parents would be disappointed or upset with me about. One thought might have been, my parents are going to kill me. Mm-hmm. But another thought was, I did something wrong. I'm bad. Mm-hmm. I'm a terrible person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is a self-gaslighting. That's a distortion.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was a little girl. I wasn't a terrible person. Mm-hmm. I was a kid.
Yep.
And I was trying to figure out how to be in the world and try to figure out how to live my life. And I made mistakes.
Yep.
That was the truth. But I remember hearing in my mind, oh my gosh, I made a mistake. I'm bad. I'm wrong.
Yep. Not lovable. Any of those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. It would snowball into some version of not lovable, not valuable, not capable.
Yep. Yeah. And that is.
When truly, you and I know people aren't all good or all bad.
Yeah.
We live in some. I had some poor behaviors as a child. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had some don't really great behaviors.
Don't we all? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to deconstruct that a little bit more and help people understand the dynamics of that. I can't wait. What was one of your adult ones?
Well, that one was actually the same for adults.
Yeah.
That example of adults thinking if something happens, I'm a bad person, I'm less than, not good enough. That is the example. I wanted to give a story, tell a story of a time that I catastrophized and what that snowball effect looked like for me.
Let's go into that.
Okay. So I have two children, as you know. I have two boys. And when my second child was born, I experienced postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. I'd heard about that, but I didn't know what that was like until it happened to me.
Yeah.
And my boy was only a few weeks old. And my husband was working. I was home with an almost 3-year-old and an infant. Mm-hmm. And I was struggling.
Yeah.
And my husband came home and he said, I see the house is in disarray. Can I help you? May I help you fold the clothes? I'd taken the laundry out of the dryer, but I could not function well. And the depression was so big and the towels were in the basket. And so here was my husband trying to help me.
Yeah.
Can I help you fold the towels? I remember, Sarah, I went into our bedroom. I climbed into bed. I pulled the covers over my head.
Yeah.
And my thought process went something like this. I can't even fold the towels. Mm-hmm. I'm not a good homemaker. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I'm not a good homemaker. I'm not a good mom. Mm-hmm. I can't clean this house. Mm-hmm. I'm not a good wife because I can't do things the way I used to.
Yeah.
I don't understand what's happening to me. I'm not a good friend either. I'm so overwhelmed. I'm so sad. I don't know what's happening. I can't call my friends. Mm-hmm. Now I'm a terrible person.
Right.
I'm so terrible and bad. I don't think I should be around. I think my husband needs a new wife. Mm. I think my kids need a new mom. Mm-hmm. Maybe the world would be better off without me. Mm.
That got to be a pretty big snowball, huh?
It snowballed fast.
Yeah.
It got big. Mm-hmm. The shame, the catastrophe of this. Really? He just wanted to help with the towels.
Right. I can imagine your husband like, what the fuck? Like, I was just trying to like, what happened? What did I do?
I remember him coming to me and saying, MJ, what's going on? Are you okay? And I, at that point, when that moment, the story I'm telling was the moment when I realized I'm actually not okay. I've never experienced this. I think I need help.
Yeah.
Maybe this is what postpartum depression feels like. Mm-hmm. And so that moment was so significant. I remember it all these years later. Mm. And it was the moment that turned me toward, this is scaring me and I need to go get help. Mm-hmm. And so I sought professional help at that point.
Yeah. And again, just to draw the distinction for our listeners, right? Like there's no shame here. And so that we can understand the difference between someone who is able in that moment to use their tools and someone who is not able in that moment to use their tools or doesn't even know yet, right? Because a lot of it is we haven't been given these tools. So until we're given the tools, of course, we can't use them. We've never been given them or told how to use them, right? So someone who maybe is further along or a different place or has some tools or any of these different kinds of things, you know, they might say something like, wow, I'm really feeling a little bit of shame, right? Like, again, it doesn't mean that we don't feel the shame. It means, oh, okay, I'm feeling some shame right now. And then they might go into some self-talk like, or, hey, husband, you know, can you speak some reassuring messages to me to help me back? Right? Like, look, there's any number of tools that we might use. Again, not so that we don't ever have any kind of snowball, but we're able to stop it from rolling further and getting bigger by using our tools. So that would be not catastrophizing. Naming things is not catastrophizing. It's when we start snowballing and things get bigger and the maybe implications or ramifications of the situation get bigger than they otherwise would be if we weren't catastrophizing. Does that sound accurate to you?
Yes. I was thinking, Sarah, back when at the time of that story, I didn't know what shame was. Mm-hmm. I experienced it quite a bit, yeah. But I didn't have a name for it. Uh-huh. So I hadn't built up shame awareness or shame resilience.
Yeah.
I didn't know the word catastrophizing at that time.
Right.
So I didn't have those tools available to me.
Yeah.
Until I got some help.
Yeah.
And somebody else said, hey, let me teach you about shame and let me teach you about catastrophizing.
Right. No, I mean, what you said is so normal. I would think every single person on the face of the planet has done that kind of snowballing talk before. And like you said, until we're given the word, we're like, oh, okay. Like that's actually a thing. And it's something that doesn't actually serve me. It's a normal human thing. But it's a human thing that doesn't serve me. So let's see if I can do something about that. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So normal. There's nothing that you said in that line of thinking that I was like, whoa, that was weird. I was like, no. I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
We're
like,
Exactly.
So, you know, outside of it being such a big thing that, you know, your husband came and was like, wow, are you okay? Can you remember any other implications or kind of side effects that this had on you and your ability to show up in life because of this catastrophizing that you did in this situation?
So that was not my last episode of catastrophizing by any means.
Yeah.
So as I think back on times when I have catastrophized, what happens to me? My anxiety or my fear ramps up.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of what ifs. Mm-hmm. Well, what if this happens and what if that happens?
Yeah.
So my brain becomes preoccupied with thoughts of what's terrible, what could be terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel out of control.
Mm-hmm.
I can lose my footing, lose my power. Feeling powerless, helpless can lead to feeling hopeless.
Yeah.
And so now in come the depression feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So anxiety and catastrophizing for me and sometimes for others can lead to depression.
Yeah.
And feelings of hopelessness and helplessness. And then if it keeps on going, if that snowball keeps on rolling, then it can lead to despair.
Yeah.
And if I'm feeling all those things, my functioning is impacted. I can become paralyzed and not get things done. And then there's a real fun thing that happens. Once paralysis happens, once my functioning is impacted, then I can start thinking about all the things that I am no longer doing because my functioning is impacted.
Right.
Which then goes back to the beginning and I cycle through it again.
Yep.
And it's almost like going down the drain. It's
that
negative feedback loop and I spiral down.
Yeah. Yeah.
So stopping the catastrophizing gives me a chance to have what we call a positive feedback loop. It gives me a chance to pull myself up and out, to get back to being grounded in truth and reality, what is real, so that I can feel better emotionally, have more positive thoughts, feedback on the ground, feeling secure and safe again.
Yeah. I love that so much. So we already kind of talked about how you started identifying this. It was basically like it was causing so much impact on your life. You were almost like not forced to, but in a way forced to, right? It's like, I have to, this is unmanageable. I'm not okay with how I'm able to show up, with how I feel, any of those kinds of things. I need help, right? Was there any, before we get into the deconstruction, no, we're just going to go into the deconstruction zone and I'm going to have you share a few tips at the end. Y'all are in for a treat getting some tips in this podcast from, in my opinion, I know I'm a little bit biased, in my opinion, one of the best therapists in this country. So
you
could search coast to coast and you'd end up right here in Austin, Texas, being like, oh, she's here. Yes.
Thank you, Sarah.
You're welcome. So deserving. I could bring on probably hundreds, if not thousands of people to affirm that. But let's go ahead and I'll stop like geeking out about you and go into the deconstruction zone so my listeners can understand a little bit more about how this happens and why we do it. I think that is a really important part that I wanted to deconstruct today. So this is going to sound a little bit different than quite a few of the podcasts I've done because this isn't interpersonal, like between two people. This is just with myself. This is self-gaslighting. So deconstructing this is going to be a little bit different. I believe that catastrophizing actually falls under the tactic of changing reality, kind of like you talked about earlier, right? So when we do this to ourselves, it's different. There's one thing when somebody else does it to it, but when we do it to ourselves, we are unknowingly distorting the facts, right? So I could geek out and we could talk about cognitive distortion, which is a therapy term, right? But that's what we do. We unknowingly distort the facts of things we either have experienced, right? Like I got in trouble, I did something bad. And so this is, right, I'm distorting the experience that has happened or may experience. Right? Like I'm going to distort the facts about what I think is going to happen based on this, et cetera, et cetera. Right? So with catastrophizing, it's a negative distortion, just to be clear, right? I think people can sometimes gaslight themselves with a positive distortion. Right? Like I'm going to over-exaggerate how great things are. It's not what we're talking about here, right? With catastrophizing, obviously. But, this typically for me, and I'll ask you what you think about this, but I think this is usually either in the way of how people will view us, right? We catastrophize that, or the danger or harm we may experience. I think it usually falls into one of those two categories. Do you see any other categories?
Again?
Yeah. I'm sure it will help my listeners too. So I think we distort the facts that are either going to revolve around how people may see us based on whatever the experience is, or the danger or harm we may experience because of the situation.
I think you're spot on.
Yeah. Awesome.
So, Sarah.
Yes, ma'am.
Because we humans are attachment-based, because we are creatures who our brains are desired to connect with others of our species, attaching with other humans. Right. It's wired in.
Yep.
This is what we do.
Yep.
And when we struggle to attach, that's when humans can have distress.
Yep.
And so when you say when catastrophizing happens, one aspect of that could be that we are distorting how people may see us. And that to the human brain's amygdala, the part of our brain that detects danger, If we think others don't see us clearly,
yep.
if they don't see us and with positive eyes, if we are afraid of rejection, abandonment, mm-hmm. betrayal, how people see us can become a crisis.
Absolutely.
Because then that breaks our attachment. Maybe they don't like us.
Yep.
Maybe they won't be with us.
Yep.
And the brain absolutely registers that as danger.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense as you're saying that, that one aspect of this catastrophizing is the brain becomes afraid of other people seeing us in a negative way,
yep.
or they see us as less than not good enough, and then the relationship is impacted.
Right. So if I tell them how I really feel, they're going to be mad at me, or they're going to not love me, or they're going to walk away from me, or right. That's catastrophizing, right?
Yes. That's a form of catastrophe.
I mean, for some of us, that might be, this is where I want to say, that might be an actual truth, right? Like I have had some people who, you know, when they are finally standing up to their gaslighter and they're like, you know what, I'm going to speak my truth. And then their person walks away. But that, you know, it's different. What we're talking about is when we're unknowingly catastrophizing, when it's not an actual thing, right? It can actually keep us in a place where we convince ourselves to not speak the truth because of fear. Right. That's
yes.
the component of the self-gaslighting. And I think similarly, one of the things that I wanted to pull out to help my listeners understand about this is often we subconsciously make agreements with others in order to keep that attachment. Right. So if I come across as emotional or intense or these different things that might be a part of my true personality, and the other person is like, whoa, you're intense, meaning a negative thing. I might make an agreement that, okay, unknowingly, I need to be less intense in order to not push them away, right? We agree with things that are actually out of alignment with who we are authentically. Okay. An example for me with this, I wanted to give this example so that my listeners could connect all the dots here. Growing up, I have an older sister who's very, very opposite of me. I'm 5'7", very sporty, athletic. She was like 5'2" and like a dancer and like tiny, right? Like probably 105 pounds when she was younger. And I was looking at her as my older sister, as, you know, as kids do, we look to those around us to define our sense of reality. So I looked at her. She was, you know, in alignment also with a lot of society, the definition of feminine, right? That picture of, you know, the woman that can be picked up and carried over the threshold on the wedding day or whatever, you know, like all of these images of what feminine was, right? So I unknowingly made this agreement that, well, that means I'm not feminine because that's not how I am, right? And for a long time, I operated the line of thinking, the kind of catastrophic thinking for me was I blew that out of proportion. And I meant, okay, because I'm not like her, I'm not feminine. And because I'm not feminine, I'm not attractive. And because I'm not attractive, people aren't going to want me. Right? Like that was my line of catastrophizing that wasn't accurate. Right. So,
that's not accurate.
No. Right. So, so for a lot of us, when we're looking at it from this line and that this is so important and crucial, if we're going to learn how to live to be free and awake and fully in alignment with who we are, we have to be able to identify that kind of catastrophizing, right? It's like, no,
yes.
I get to be who I am. It's not, I'm not sexy unless I do what all these other people, that's catastrophizing. You get to be sexy if you think you're being sexy, right? Like if you feel sexy, you're being sexy, right? If it's sensitive, right? Like if you enjoy being sensitive, you get to be sensitive. Like all of these different things, I won't be lovable until that's actually catastrophizing.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that's a form of self-gaslighting because it causes us to live out of alignment with our reality, which is, if this is who I am and I live any other way than who I am not connected to reality. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
As you were talking, Sarah, I was thinking about your previous podcast guest,
mm-hmm.
Haley Drew.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. So in her story, she talked about being on the train mm-hmm. and about wrapping her arm around her boyfriend's arm. It was close quarters. Mm-hmm. And the way he responded to her, and he said something about, "You're so needy." Mm-hmm. She wasn't needy. She was on a train in close quarters, and he was her person.
Yeah.
And so, of course, she put her arm through his.
Yeah.
But she said when that happened, it distorted her reality.
Yep.
It made her doubt herself such that in the years that followed, she doubted herself. Mm-hmm. She doubted her reality. She mm-hmm. wondered if she was a needy person, and it impacted her ability to then show affection to other people. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're saying. When sometimes we can subconsciously agree with someone else's distorted version of ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that she gave an example of just that.
Yeah. And again, Maya Angelou quote, we don't know we're doing that until somebody brings it to our attention that this is what we're doing. And we're like, oh crap. Yeah, I do that. Like, wow. I didn't realize I was abandoning myself when I did that. I never connected those dots. And of course, because they're not necessarily natural dots to connect. And yet that part of that quote, when you know better, do better. It's like, as we're bringing attention, we're presenting you with the opportunity to do better.
Yes.
Right. So I really thought this was important too, because I think, you know, we can identify with both ways, I think, that we can catastrophize. So I wanted to talk about this for a moment, because a lot of my listeners, I mean, everybody, I believe, experiences trauma at different times in their life, but a lot of my listeners come from very specific and very, usually very recent kinds of trauma, right? So I believe that catastrophizing is part of a survival or trauma response, right? So it's our brain's job to protect us, right? Its job is to assess for potential hurt or harm around us, right? Like, we do it every day in so many different ways. Like, we see a twig and, you know, our brain quickly assesses, you better step around that or you might trip. Like, it's subconscious. It's our brain's function, right? However, right, ongoing trauma, which gaslighting is ongoing trauma, right? It is part of a pattern, right? So if we are experiencing ongoing trauma in any number of places, that can actually exacerbate that issue in our brain. Or another way that you could think of it is it can cause this function in our brain to work on overdrive, right?
It's like the gas pedal on the car being perpetually held down.
Yes.
So we're always on guard.
Correct.
The amygdala is firing, danger, correct, danger. And then we could, when we experience trauma, we could misperceive danger.
Correct.
Sometimes when it's not happening because the gas pedal's stuck.
Exactly. Right. So again, normal, natural, there's no shame. And I've had people before say, like, so are you telling me that when I'm scared that this is going to happen, I'm like wrong? No, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm saying what we want to focus on here is not the rightness or wrongness, but what's most helpful for me. And what's most helpful for me is to adequately name the danger that I might be in, the quote unquote danger that I might be in, so that I can use the appropriate tool. That's what this is about. Okay. So, you know, like in the situation, times in my life when I worried that I was too much, right? I had a fear of rejection, right? Like that thing, I'm too sensitive, I'm too much, anything like that. That's an example. Or sometimes there can be a fear of some sort of retaliation, right? So if I can predict, this is what our brain does. If I can predict the hurt or the harm, I might be able to avoid it. Right? So we kind of forecast a worst case scenario, right? And that's where we need to pay attention, right? It's normal, natural, and it might not serve us. The worst case scenario might actually be valid, but it might not be. And we have to kind of like stop believing in that old adage that it's better to be prepared and not need it than to need it and not be prepared. That in this kind of a situation with catastrophizing, it's actually not accurate because of what you said earlier, right? Because this can this can cause us to burn through the beautiful, wonderful things that we have in our brain that are meant to help us feel balanced. If it's chronic, we can actually bring disease into our own body, right? Like autoimmune diseases and different things like that. So we actually have to reframe that and be like, no, actually, it's not better to be prepared and not need it. What is best is to pay attention, right? Like, and name as accurately as I can what I think is about to happen or what the potential outcomes can be so that I can use the correct tools.
And one of those tools, Sarah, is trying to stay in the here and now.
Yes, agreed.
Because catastrophizing can, as you named, we can go backwards and to think that because we did something in the past, mm-hmm. we're terrible, horrible people.
Yep.
And we catastrophize how others might see us. It might be future fear. We worry that something catastrophic might happen in the future.
Yep.
One way to manage that, I believe, is to try to stay in the here and now.
Yeah.
What's happening right now. While I cannot sometimes control the stressors,
mm-hmm.
I might have some inability to control these things that are impacting me. Can I manage my stress?
Yeah.
What can I do right now to care for my body, for my brain,
yep.
to reduce my anxiety and my fear, to help me feel safe and care for my body?
Yeah. So here's where I want to say, like, a lot of this is when I had my guest Kat on, she talked about it was like an excavation. It was like a deep excavation to unearth some of these things. And just want to encourage you as my listeners, like, a lot of these things that we might talk about, especially in today's episode, it's really helpful to get some professional help. It's not a shaming thing to need professional help. It's one of the best things we can do for ourselves. So if you feel like this is something that you do, and you're like, I really want to change this. I don't know that it's necessarily a self-help thing. Like, I think a little bit of outside help might behoove you. So I just want to encourage you to reach out different places, try to get some help with that, because it's one of the most liberating things we can do when we start recognizing when we are gaslighting ourselves in this manner, and we feel stronger, we feel clearer, we feel freer. So many great things. So here's where I want to just make a quick mention that if you would like to submit a question or you would like to be a guest on my podcast and talk about something that is on your heart or brain or you're curious about, please visit my website. The link will be in the show notes for you, and you can let me know that you'd like to be on or submit a question. I'd like to move into our Set Your Alarm segment today. And today, what I wanted to give to you all is a tool that we talked a lot about tools today, a tool that I give to a lot of my clients in my group programs or in my individual session. And that is what I call my uncomfortable or hurt or harm scale. So imagine a scale from 0 to 10, uncomfortable is 0, hurt is at a 5, and harm is at a 10. And what we're meant to do is use it for self-assessment, right? So in any kind of given situation, you kind of think, okay, so I messed up at work and I'm going to be late on a deadline. Does this make me feel uncomfortable? Does this hurt me? Does this harm me? Right? So it's just a way to kind of self-regulate, honestly, right? Because sometimes, again, when we experience chronic trauma, something that if we weren't in the middle of chronic trauma would feel uncomfortable, it can go from 0 to 10 really fast. And that's not saying anything's wrong with you. It's saying let's self-regulate by naming accurately how detrimental or distressful a situation is, okay? So as it pertains to catastrophizing, I wanted to give y'all a kind of a four-step little process that you can do, okay? The first thing is to name the situation. What actually is it? Notice if there's any vagueness, right? Because vagueness is a big culprit of that snowball effect, right? So get specific about what the facts are. Facts and just the facts, okay? Then number two is get curious and ask, what am I making up is happening or will happen, right? And understanding that this is normal, right? Thank you, Brené Brown. Our brain's job is to fill in the gaps. We create stories, based on the facts that we have and where there are any gaps, we fill it in with whatever, you know, our brain decides to fill in with. So just pay attention. Ask yourself, am I filling in any gaps here? Am I making anything up? Number three, another way to get curious is ask yourself very gently with lots of self-compassion, am I exaggerating anything? Right? No shame. Just, am I exaggerating? Is it potential? Is there potential? We might not be, but we might be, right? Kind of that energy. Am I distorting the facts anywhere? Am I making things potentially a bigger deal, right? Not to self-gaslight ourselves in the other way of like, oh, well, this really sucks and I'm going to say that it's great. No, that's what I'm talking about, right? Like just being real. Okay, number four, where on that scale, that uncomfortable hurt harm scale, would this fall? And so very briefly, want to share that example that I shared earlier about me and the catastrophizing I did around what it means to be feminine, right? So when I went through this four-step process, I named the situation. I don't feel very feminine, right? This is years ago, by the way. It's not how I currently feel about myself. Thank goodness. But number one, I don't feel very feminine. I feel this way. These are the facts. I feel this way because I based my understanding of feminine around my older sister and the way society defines feminine. Okay. Number two, I make up that this means I won't be wanted because I don't fit the definition. Okay. That's the holes my brain filled up. The gaps my brain filled up. Number three, the facts are I am a woman. That is how I identify, right? I will no longer distort those facts to try to align them with other people's definitions of feminine. Other people can have their own definition of feminine. I have mine. I am feminine. Okay. Number four, it used to harm me, right? When I look at the scale, back in the day, it used to harm me because I was trying to be something I wasn't. Because I thought those things, I abandoned myself to try to be something I wasn't, right? Now, it can still sometimes make me a little bit uncomfortable when other people try to define me, but it no longer causes me hurt or harm. Okay. So that's how we use the uncomfortable hurt harm scale as a way to identify and flip the script and write our own narrative when it comes to catastrophizing. So being a little cheeky, I wanted to say, you know, sometimes we set an alarm and sometimes we know we might not catch the alarm, so we set a snooze button. So MJ today, I wanted to invite her on to see if she had anything she wanted to add as a little snooze button for us. MJ, is there anything you would like to add as a tip for my listeners today?
Yes. If we can't catch this ourselves, we recognize we're in distress, maybe we can identify in some way we are catastrophizing, we feel it snowballing, but we can't figure out the four steps that you said.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the snooze button. Here's how to slow it down. We need others, right? We humans are created to be in relationships. And sometimes we can't see things, right? When we hear it takes a village to raise a child,
mm-hmm.
it takes a village to raise an adult.
Right. Uh-huh.
And so I'm thinking one possible snooze button might be we reach out to a safe other person to help us pull apart the distortion, the catastrophizing, and what's happening so that we can get our feet on the ground. Grounded in truth.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you for that. MJ, thank you so, so much for being on here today. I know that there have been lots of little nuggets of like super amazing help that have been, scattered throughout the podcast just by simply being here with your energy and your analogies and your insights. So thank you so much.
It has been my pleasure. What an honor to spend some time with you, Sarah, and with your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and we'll have her back on again, y'all. MJ and I already talked about another topic that we'd like to cover. So for my listeners, I want to say to you, thank you for listening today and just remind you, right, like these things, especially that we talked about today, it is meant to be about living as awake and free and aligned with ourselves authentically as possible. Okay. It's not about you're doing things wrong or you're telling yourself bad. It's about, how do I be free? How do I be grounded? And we just wanted to gift that with you today. So if you found it helpful, please leave a review and subscribe. And if you think others would benefit from it, please share it. And in alignment with today's message, again, it's not about becoming who you want to be. It's about awakening all that you already are. And once again, so many of my listeners' favorite song right now, Wendy Childs, Not Today. We got stars in our eyes like diamonds. We got heart in the fuel to light it. Yeah, we burn it up. We got all the magic. Shout out if you have it. Yeah, we go.